You would think a hungry child would want to eat just about anything, but a lot of children only want to eat what they want to eat. And so we ask, how do you get an obstinate child to eat what you want them to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1413th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host of this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, when it comes to feeding the child, few children are more difficult to feed than those who are picky eaters. You know what they should eat, but they know what they will eat. When what you know they should eat is not what they will eat, you're likely to be facing a hunger strike to manage. For those who are trying to feed a child who will not eat what they are supposed to eat, there are three possible courses of action. One, confrontation, in which you set the food in front of the child and wait until he or she eats. Two is the negotiation, in which you offer a little of what the child wants to eat on the condition the child eats a little of what you want them to eat. And three, capitulation, in which you let them eat what they want to eat and hope they grow out of their obstinance. For parents of picky eating children, this negotiation of getting the kid to eat can be an emotional nightmare. After all, that food the child will not eat is their future. But what if you are the child's nanny? The difficulties of managing a picky eating child are doubled as you both have a troubled child and troubled parents to contend with. Given that double trouble, who better to ask how to feed the child than a professional nanny? With that, we welcome Daniel Flint, who is Maryland's Danny the Nanny. Well, Danielle, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's so nice to be here.
So I have to ask you, were you a picky child as a picky eater as a child?
I would say I was on the pickier side, but certainly not as picky as some of the children I've worked with.
Okay, good. Well, I was not a picky eating child, but my kid brother was. Meat and potatoes, and that was it. Now, I watched as my parents tried what they might to get him to eat his veggies. No way. But you know what? Eventually, he grew out of that and developed naturally in all other respects. Handsome, healthy guy. And so that was my first experience with picky eating. But I have to ask you, as a nanny, you're a professional caregiver, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you run across picky eating in your career as a nanny?
Yes, I have. I have seen eaters across the board from I will only eat chicken nuggets all the way to kids who have very expensive tastes and only want, the priciest foods, whether or not the parent has any interest in giving them to the child.
Well, before we move on, what is it about chicken nuggets and
you
kids?
Know, I think it's a comfort. It's fried, it's protein, which at least you're getting protein, and then you can dip it in anything you want. So it's something that you can smother in ketchup or honey mustard or ranch or just honey. It's certainly easier to get in a child's mouth, but
it seems to be universally a favorite for kids.
Yes, definitely. Oh, for most kids, at least.
Yeah, good. And then, was I wrong about as being a nanny that you have double trouble? in that you have to work with a child who's a picky eater. Then you have to worry about deal with parents who are freaked out because their child is a picky eater. So you're kind of caught in between there.
There's certainly some families where that's the case. You have some parents who just get so frustrated because their child won't eat what they want them to eat. So then they let the child choose not to eat, and an hour later, the child has a tantrum because they're angry. And so the parent learns, okay, fine. I'll just feed them only carbohydrates because I know they'll eat that and then they'll be full and I won't have to deal with the tantrum later. Well, even a 3-year-old can't survive on pasta and popcorn alone. So, what you, in my experience, it's about finding where the child's diet is and then taking it to where I would like it to be, or where they are able to experience new foods and even just try things. Because if they really don't like it, that's okay. But some kids, it's just they just need to try it the first time and they go, oh, that looked weird and it smelled weird and I didn't want to put it in my mouth. But once I did, I really liked it.
Now, going back to the parents, how do you manage them? Because it would seem like they would almost be more difficult to manage than the kid who's refusing to eat this. You have to have some kind of negotiation with a parent to so that you work out a plan that you're both on this track, right?
Yes, some parents want me to just continue what they've been doing because they don't want to make my job harder. And they know that this will work, and then they know that, the kid will have a full stomach when I leave for the day. Other parents, and some of these parents I just happen to meet at school pickups, are sitting there going, I don't know what to do because my child only eats five things and three of them are terrible for her. So what do I do? And it's really finding that compromise. In any situation, I feel like as the nanny, my best option is to be the balance to the parents. So if it's a two-parent household,
Well,
find
then
the
it's even
middle
more
between the
complex,
parents.
right? So you have to work out a
Yeah.
deal. Not only you have to work out a deal with parents, but you have to work out a deal between parents.
Yes.
So you have to negotiate
And
with a husband
sometimes they don't.
and a wife, right?
And sometimes the parents aren't communicating with each other, which is when it gets really complicated, because if mom's saying, hey, every night we have vegetables with dinner and we have a protein, and yes, they can have carbs. And dad goes, you know what, here, you just want fries? You can have just fries. I don't want to have this argument. When you come in, the kids look at you and they go, okay, where are your boundaries? How do I manage to get you to just feed me fries if that's all I want to eat?
You're like the substitute teacher that comes into the classroom, and all the kids are going, "Oh boy, it's a substitute teacher. We can get what we want now."
That's right. And that's anytime I start with a new family, I have to set those boundaries with children and go, okay, I know. You want, whether it's true or not, you want to tell me that mommy or daddy lets you eat whatever you want and whatever you want happens to be candy. That's nice. That's not happening when I'm in charge.
Ah, now this is something that a lot of parents don't do anymore is set boundaries. Is that true, or is that just my imagination?
It really depends on the parent. Some parents don't want to have to set boundaries. They want to sit there and go, okay, well, if I just ask them again and again, maybe they'll do it. Other parents get so frustrated that it creates an environment where the child may be doing things out of fear or avoiding punishment simply because the parent is overwhelmed. Because we have to remember we're adults and we may not, if we don't feed ourselves, for example, and we're not eating right, then we do get overwhelmed and we still have that little person inside us who needs to be fed and needs enough water. And sometimes we take care of kids and we forget to take care of ourselves. And that's when I think parents find themselves more overwhelmed and then more likely to take kind of shortcuts because they don't want to deal with their overwhelm and their children's overwhelm as well.
And of course, the children pick up on the parents' frustration. And I suspect try to take advantage of that too.
Yes, absolutely.
So
Yeah.
at what age, as being a nanny, at what age do children start developing the ability to manipulate those around them, like their parents, for example, or you? At what point, at what age do you sense that they're actively manipulating the people around them?
It depends on the child. I would say around five is when you really start seeing it happen, obviously, but it depends on what you're thinking about manipulation wise, because there's plenty of 2-year-olds who, have a little bump, and if no one's there to watch them and go, oh, whatever. But if there's an adult there who will react, they go, ah, I'm in so much pain and just tears all over the place. So even infants, I wouldn't call it manipulation, but they can read the room way more than we give them credit for.
So they're, even though they're kids, they're a lot smarter than you would think that they would be, and they're actively working their environment to change it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. This is Michael Olson, the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking with Maryland's Danny the Nanny, none other than Danielle Flint. How long have you been a nanny, Danielle?
Over 2 decades.
Over 2 decades. So if there's anybody to know, it's Danny the Nanny. So we're talking about feeding the kid, which is always an interesting adventure. I want you to stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Danielle Flint, who is Danny the Nanny, in up there in the Maryland neck of the woods, where it is spring, which is we're happy to hear for you. There's nothing more fun than spring after a winter, and you folks have had a winter. So welcome to spring.
We have.
Okay, we're talking about feeding the child, which, of course, is what we as adults must do and must do well, because that child is our future. And if we don't do a good job of feeding the child, we are all going to be in big trouble for the future. And so feeding the child is very important. Now, we pretty much, parents as parents, have a pretty good idea of what we want that child to eat. We want it to eat the child to eat a balanced meal with proteins and vitamins and minerals and the vegetables and carbohydrates. So we have a pretty good idea of what we want the child to eat. But children often get the idea that they want to eat something else or nothing else. And so we're fixed with facing these problems of basic eating disorders. And if you do a quick search on childhood eating disorders, you'll find 100 million problems to deal with. And I thought, who better to describe these issues than Danny the Nanny, who gets to see a lot of different children and also see how they go about eating. What percentage of the children have no eating disorders, in your rough guessing estimation, Danny? Danielle?
Probably about 50%.
So half the kids have no trouble.
Trouble at all.
That means half of them do have problems. Holy smokes. That's a lot of people to have trouble eating disorders. Would you describe kind of the spectrum of eating disorders for us?
Yes. So you'll have anything from children who have extreme sweet teeth. And, you know, that's really the only thing they want to eat. I was that child.
Sweet tooth, you need to have the sweets.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's, what am I going to get out of this? You know, you want me to eat what's on my plate? Well, you know, what's for dessert? Which is a question that I get from kids occasionally. And that is my answer, depending on what's going on, is we don't need to worry about dessert based on the way your plate looks right now.
Okay.
And, you know, if they're not eating. But that was my parents' rule, was we're not even discussing dessert.
So this is the confrontation technique, right? This is the confrontation. So your parents are telling you, no sense thinking about dessert until you eat what's on your plate. And that's the rule. I'm the boss. So that's the confrontation.
It is a certain amount of confrontation. There's also the aspect of, you know, if I sit a child down for a meal and they're doing well, and I only have to go, okay, you know, have that carrot, you know, have a couple more bites of protein. Then at the end, whether or not they've asked for dessert, I'm happy to go, hey, why don't we have a small scoop of ice cream? Because you did so well this time. And that's the positive reinforcement. It's not an assumption that dessert is going to happen. It's the, wow, this time you did a really good job. I'm so proud of you. Do you want a cookie?
Yeah. Celebration, right?
Exactly. And we all deserve a treat sometimes, especially when we've done something that is so difficult and so frustrating for us.
Well, that's an easy negotiation if the child will buy into it. And what will happen then if the child, have you run across a situation where the child says, "No, not going to buy into that. I am not going to eat that stuff no
I
matter
have.
what."
Yes, there are definitely kids who will not even, they'd just rather starve. They would honestly, because part of it is they know that sooner or later somebody is going to feed them something else.
So it's like a hunger, they're actually
There
a
may
hunger
not,
strike, right?
it can be a hunger strike. Some kids just aren't that hungry to begin with at the times where you're trying to feed them. And whether that's about, this is the time in our schedule where we can feed you. We've got to do dinner and then we have to do bath time and then we have to go to bed. So right now I need you to eat. And so that also comes down to, okay, if 6 o'clock is dinner time, I gave them snacks right after school and then they had another snack an hour later, maybe we don't have that other snack. Or maybe we make sure that other snack is something super healthy and light, so that when dinner comes around, they're actually hungry again.
No. And I was wondering about snacks because that's an awful deleterious way of feeding the child, but it gets right down to it. You have to be pretty careful about that, don't you? Because if you feed too many snacks, there goes the evening meal. And then they're only going to eat what they want to eat.
I'm losing you, Michael.
Ah.
Sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
Oh, okay. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. Good. Yes. I was thinking about the danger of snacks and how it can easily disrupt a main meal. Our family, my mother was always very religious about preparing a meal for the family. And the meal always consisted of everything you'd want to eat, plus a dessert at the end. And I think having that full spectrum of food, I was never much of a candy person as a consequence of that. I think that your body, the body was well fed and wasn't craving anything like sweets or anything. But I was thinking the danger of snacks always tend to be carbohydrates or sweets of some kind. And if you feed them the sweets in between meals, you're in danger of destroying the efficacy of the meal. So it must be a very touchy thing to do snacks right.
Yes. Snacks are they're really a necessity for kids because they burn through calories so quickly. They're always doing some sort of physical activity. They're running around. Their brain is growing so quickly that they need a lot of calories. That's why they eat usually around the same amount as adults, depending on the child. Toddlers, for example, will really eat one meal a day and then they'll have snacks throughout the rest of the day. And that's a very normal eating schedule for a toddler. It's not because the parent is being overly permissive or anything.
It's just the way they
That's
eat.
just, yeah, I mean, they have tiny stomachs because they're tiny humans. So,
Okay.
They still need, they may have a snack at 9 a.m. and then another snack at 10 a.m. After having breakfast at 6 or 7. But they need those little incremental snacks to keep their blood sugar high enough so they don't have a meltdown. And as you get with you get older, with, for example, a 7-year-old, kind of that whole elementary school range, they need a snack at school. They're going to need, of course, their breakfast, their lunch, and their dinner. A snack after school, for sure. And then, depending on their physical activities or their after school programs, how late they're going to be up, they may need more snacks. But it comes down to making sure that the snacks they have are healthy things. So, yogurt, if you have something, a cold place to store it. Cheeses, I love to give kids if they're into cheese. Some kids aren't. And then fruits and vegetables. If you have a child who's willing to eat veggies, carrot sticks, celery sticks with peanut butter and raisins, we used to call them ants on a log. Some kids go nuts for those. I certainly did. But it really just depends on the child and their preferences. When I pack school lunches and school snacks, I always aim to give the child healthy options. I don't necessarily expect them to come back with an empty lunchbox and to say, oh, look at me, I ate all of my lunch. Maybe they don't like grapes or they don't like grapes that day. But the fact that they have the healthy options and that you continue to give them food that they'll eat, that's healthy, as well as food, new foods to try. Because maybe their friend will go, oh, you have strawberries today? And the kid who would never have touched their strawberries suddenly goes, oh, strawberries are.
There you go. So kids teaching kids how to eat, as they teach kids, other kids, how to do just about
Exactly.
everything when it gets right down to it, very important. Then
They do.
I suppose carbohydrates are important as well because they need that energy food too, don't they?
They do. The carbs break down. That's why athletes will carbo load before big events. If kids are swimming, they're doing karate, dance classes, all sorts of things. You want to make sure that they have that sugar ready, in the form of carbohydrates, and other, whole fruits. Or even dried fruits, especially in winter. On your coast, you
Yeah.
have access to constant fresh fruit. And I'm so jealous, I miss that. But out here we can get some, and then you can supplement with dried fruit bars, nuts, because you do want to have that protein available to them, because once the sugar's gone, you still have to have something to work on.
And then as you do this feeding of young kids, I think it would probably be very important to when they're very young, to feed them a variety of different foods and thereby get them over the anxiety of eating strange things. Is that true?
Yes. Absolutely. It starts, I'm sure all moms out there know that it starts in pregnancy,
Yes,
but
exactly.
it
That's
doesn't, it doesn't have to. If you've adopted or you maybe have some regrets about how you ate before your child was born, that's nothing to be worried about, because it's about training them. If I really can't get a kid to eat, I will blanch vegetables and puree them and hide them if I have to,
What do you
as a
mean,
last
hide them?
resort.
Hide them in the
So
food?
hide them in the food. And I don't mean, just putting some broccoli underneath their mac and cheese. I mean, adding more vegetables than you would normally see in a spaghetti recipe.
Right,
So,
right. So make spaghetti and hide the vegetables in the spaghetti. Does that work? Or do they
it
spot the
does.
broccoli and go, "Ah, there's broccoli. I'm not going to eat that."
Well, you have to do it with things that they won't necessarily spot, and it helps to blanch food first. So you don't want like big pieces of onions visible. You want it to be really
Yeah.
well pureed. And then there's also options like naming the foods or giving them fun colors that are naturally available. So using beet juice in a muffin and then calling them princess cupcakes because they're pink now. There you have the iron from the beets, and you can put whatever else in the muffin, make it like a savory muffin, maybe a breakfast muffin or something. And the kid goes, "Princess cupcakes or princess muffins, these are like so cool. It doesn't matter that they're not, covered in extra sprinkles and
There you
tons of
go.
sugar because they're pink."
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're talking with Nanny, a real live Nanny, and her name is Danny. Well, it's actually Danielle Flint, and she is Danny the Nanny in Maryland out there, and looking toward California sometime soon. So there you go. When we come back, I'd like to delve into the really tough cases of feeding the child. So please do stay tuned. We will be right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freezer. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream, and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. We're talking about Feeding the Child with Danielle Flint, who is Danny the Nanny. And how long have you been Danny the Nanny, Danielle?
Well, Danny the Nanny is something I've created recently as my story, but
It's a good story. It's it's a friendly presentation. And if you're a parent looking for a nanny, Danny would be a fun one to consider. So nice marketing there, I think.
Yeah. I've had a lot of fun with it. But I've been nannying for over 2 decades. So I feel like I'm pretty experienced in the area. Certainly have kids who have kids of their own now who I've nannied.
Now, you mentioned having fun, which to me, I think, would be a very important part of being a nanny, especially a nanny who is trying to get a picky child to eat food. So is having fun a part of your repertoire?
Absolutely. I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't having fun. That's why I love it.
And do the children respond when you're having fun? Are they more likely to be having fun and eat what you suggest?
They do.
Good. And
sometimes, depending on the child, but they do. The more involved they are with making the food and seeing, it really helps if they see siblings or you or other people around them eating what they're expected to eat. I think it tampers down some of the anxiety that they may have, especially when it comes to trying new foods.
Okay. And anxiety is what it's all about. And speaking of anxiety, I understand that there is a real spectrum of eating disorders, just like there's a spectrum of just about everything else. Wherein you might start with a picky eater and the spectrum would go all the way up to anorexia or bulimia. Would that be a good description of the spectrum, Danielle?
Well, it kind of depends, because you have picky eaters, and that can sometimes be related to neurodivergence, especially in some more extreme cases where they only have a few safe foods, and it's finding, if you have a neurodivergent child, it can be even more challenging to open the spectrum of safe foods, because you're not just thinking about taste, you're thinking about texture, you're thinking about, how tough the food is beyond just like the general texture in your mouth. The way it goes down, all sorts of things. But with anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa, and I'm not a licensed practitioner, these issues come up much later. Plenty of toddlers are picky and they grow out of it. But with eating disorders that you're more likely to see in teenagers and older children, that comes down to a disjointed reality in seeing your body and believing that you are too overweight, even when you are completely skeletal to everyone else's view.
So it's really
body dysmorphia.
Becomes a mental issue that your mind runs away with you.
It is.
And that does
It
not
is. It is
happen with,
absolutely.
that does not really happen with children then, as young children and toddlers.
Thankfully, yes. Yes, that's something that usually comes, I would say, around middle school or high school, and most commonly among girls and young women, though boys and men certainly experience it too. Coming from society's pressures and in some cases, parents' pressures.
Yeah, all kinds of pressures. Well, the academic communities come up with an actual name for the eating disorders. They call it avoidant slash restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID, which is a big mouthful to swallow for anybody. But that would take an academic to come up with something like that. But at any rate, they kind of divide it into three different sections. The first one would be sensory-based avoidance, which was just what you were talking about. Children or the child who is sensitive to texture, smell, and so on. Like, I suppose trying to get a kid to eat kimchi would be a good example of that. Ah, not going to eat that. Another is a lack of interest in food. Low motivation for it to eat food, and fear of aversive consequences. So it's an anxiety about choking and vomiting and pain from past trauma or something. But the one that captured my attention especially was lack of interest in food, low appetite and motivation. Have you ever run across a child who was just not interested in food?
Yes, absolutely. Some kids just, especially at certain times of day, perhaps, usually at some point a child will get hungry. But there's also the, because of the rigidity of schedules, often, we want to feed kids at certain times. And
No, I'm not
I've
hungry.
had,
Yeah.
yeah, but they're not hungry. And, eating is an intense, like food is an intense part of culture. It's a part of how we connect with each other. And it's something that should be enjoyable. And if you don't allow it to be something to be enjoyed, then a child could easily lose interest, especially if you're not giving them the options that they want. So having a family meal together, sitting down and enjoying somebody's company while you eat can be a huge aspect of helping kids take the time to get away from devices, to stop worrying about whatever's going on at school, or even voice their concerns about things that are going on with them, and know that, okay, I'm being cared for, I'm getting the attention of the adults that I want. And yeah, maybe I don't really want to eat, but this is what we're doing right now, so I'm kind of going to go along with it because this is what everyone's doing.
Do you think there's anything more important to developing healthy eating habits than the family meal?
I would say it's a combination of a lot of things. Not everyone has the opportunity to have a family meal, but if you give the children healthy options and they know that the healthy options may be the only options, they'll decide, okay, if I have five options of what I can eat, I'm going to pick the one that I like more than the other four, even though what I really want is a brownie.
Well, I suspect you're right. Not everybody has the opportunity to have a family, to have a regularly scheduled family meal. I suspect very few kids do have that opportunity. That said, I still suspect having a regularly scheduled family meal is probably going to be one of the most significant things in developing healthy eating habits in life. Simply by virtue of all that you discussed, relaxing out of the day, hearing about the trials and tribulations of the other members of your family. Oh goodness, everybody else goes through this too. Relaxing into eating slowly without gobbling, as we tend to do when we're always on the run as we are. All of those things, if practiced regularly, really are character building things that are so precious. And I know for a fact that not everybody gets them. I know in talking with everybody I talk to, I know it's kind of rare when it gets right down to it. But to make good for not doing that, there's lots of things that can be done, like you suggest, to really help things along. I'd like to, if we can, switch our topic now to latchkey eating. My son-in-law was raised as a latchkey eater, and he's as healthy as can be now. But when he ate, he t describes his eating, it was always mac and cheese or something like that. How do you recommend people approach latchkey eaters in the family?
Well, latchkey children are much more rare than they used to be. But as a child grows up, they'll need as an adult. I think when you send a kid out of the house at 18, if they don't know how to boil water, if they don't know how to do their laundry, then you have failed them in some ways. And so what I try to do with my kids is around the age of 10, I try to give them opportunities to cook in the kitchen, to with supervision, use things like the knives and the stove. This is it's always under strict supervision, and it's not just okay, you can
Go
play
ahead
with
and do
knives
what you
now.
want. Yeah.
It's okay, we're gonna cut this thing. Here's the cutting board. This is the knife that you use. Here's how you use it. Now you've seen me use it this way. Now it's your turn to try doing the same thing. As for latchkey children, it makes sense that he was eating a lot of mac and cheese, ramen, all of those things that, college students are known for eating, because those are things that are easy for the child to make on their own. These days, you might have a kid who wants to make their own avocado toast. And, as long as they know how to make the egg, if they have an egg on it, cut up the avocado without hurting themselves. And for a latchkey child, they need to know safety things like, yes, sometimes knives slip, and sometimes you need that first aid, and you need to know the difference between a paper cut and a cut that really needs to be attended to, when you need to call 911, that sort of thing. Because the more responsibility you give a child in any area, but especially in a kitchen, which is a dangerous part of the
Dangerous
house.
place. Yeah. Especially
Then
as a latchkey kid, who's going to teach you? Unless you have a nanny there,
unless you
because
have a
they're a
nanny.
latchkey kid because their parents are gone. And so you're really correct. That's a
And
dangerous
they don't have a
place.
nanny.
Yeah. So any tips,
It
Nanny?
can be.
Any tips from Danny the Nanny for parents? What's the most important thing?
I would say go at the pace that you and your child need to go at. Don't push them to be like other kids. Just because Janie is, making four-course meals doesn't mean that your child needs to. If your child's learning how to use the stove on the weekends, and that's the only time you can teach them, make pancakes together, make soup, whatever they want. And the more you involve them in what you're doing, the more interested they're going to be, and the less it's going to be like a chore.
Well, there
And
it
the
is.
better prepared they're going to be in the long run.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Feeding the Child with Danielle Flint, who is Danny, the nanny. I want to thank you all for tuning in and joining us. And really think about the importance of feeding the child because they are our future. And the better we feed them, the better off our future is going to be. Thank you for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What right here on the Food Chain. And thank you, Danielle.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.